This episode of The Ride is brought to you by Weaver. Stay in tune with your equine athlete in the Synergy by Weaver Close Contact Steam Pressed Performance Pad, offering a better feel between horse and rider with 100% merino wool and a butterfly cutaway design. Synergy by Weaver invites you to put it to the test with our no-risk 90-day test drive. To another episode of The Ride. This is Jillian, and I'm here with my co-host Nicole. Today, our guest is Chelsea Sutton, who is a woman who wears many hats and has certainly made a name for herself in the horse industry. She was the first woman to ever announce in the main arena at a major reigning event at this summer's NRHA Derby. And when she's not announcing at reigning shows across the country, she's also working as a partner for her online brand, Rainer Stop. Chelsea also founded two digital marketing agencies, Visibility Creative and the Consultant Agency. Today, Chelsea is here with us to tell us about those ventures and what else she's involved with. I'm going to let her fill you in on all the details. So welcome, Chelsea, and thanks so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me. I appreciate it, and quite an introduction. I appreciate it.
So why don't we start by you just telling us a little bit about yourself and kind of how you got started with all of this.
All the things, absolutely. So growing up, my dad was a horse trainer for the first half of my life. And so, you know, born in a barn, 50 horses at home all the time. I remember the barn aisle as my, you know, playground more than I even remember our house. And so horses were always a natural part of my life in the early years. My dad got quite involved through my teenage years at the NRHA level of things, the organizational level. He was president back in 2002, was very involved in the integration of reining into the FEI and into show production, which was a really great, it was a cool transition for me to experience as a young teenager, because I got to see both the competitive side of horses as well as the production side of horse shows. And I quickly got involved with, you know, I was the gopher, right? I ran and got coffee. I picked up scribe cards. I did all those horse show things. I then started scribing, which I loved so much. And at that time, my dad was also doing a lot with judging. So there was a lot of interest there. And when I was 19, I accidentally announced my first horse show. I was at a very large derby. It was the Carolina Classic Derby, the late Carolina Classic Derby. And the announcer was there to scribe. I was a freshman in college, and the announcer didn't show up. Like, didn't get off the plane, you know, and we, of course, tried to find a backup, couldn't find one, and the show manager trusted me enough to put me on the microphone. So I joke now and can laugh about kind of the accidental scenario that was, but I remembered the first day, I was like, this is not me. I love scribing. I love being a part of that side of show production. And the second day, I was like, oh, God, I'm hooked. Like, I'm in. This is it. I love this. And so that's kind of the initial evolution into my professional career on the horse side. The marketing side was, while it seemed at the time to be a very separate part of career development, it has naturally actually crossed paths. So I went to college for a business degree. I have an undergrad in business management and entrepreneurship. And it was also at a unique time. This was 2008 when the economy crashed, and everybody was talking about you can't get jobs unless you have experience, and nobody had experience because they couldn't get jobs. And so I was already doing some work in the horse production side of things and had this business degree, got a very typical job, like normal 9-to-5 job that wouldn't let me travel for the horse shows that I was announcing. And that lasted about 6 months. And I was like, you know what? This isn't working. Actually, I think they kind of said it wasn't working. And I left and I was like, did I get fired? Like, I don't get fired. I didn't do that. But realizing that it was a it was an open door to now create a career in which I could do both, right? I could work in the horse world, I could continue announcing, and I could work in this business and marketing space that I was developing work in. And so I picked up clients instead of going to find a 9-to-5 job. I picked up one client at a time. I had one brand that came to me and needed 5 to 10 hours of business consulting and marketing, and another brand that needed 5 to 10 hours of business and marketing. And in all of those scenarios, I got to say, and I'm not available Friday to Sunday because I have a horse show. I didn't even tell them I had a horse show for the first, right, probably 2 years in consulting. You just do what you're doing and you don't really tell anybody. And now it's a very like natural and open part of my career. But that was a very cool evolution of, you know, at the time I didn't know what I was doing. I just knew what I believed in and that I wanted announcing and my work in the horse world to continue to be a pivotal part of my career while also having a career in business and marketing. And so here we are.
We always joke, Jillian and I, with guests and just our coworkers about like everybody wants to stay in the horse industry, but like people forget that you don't have to be a horse trainer to be in the horse industry. And I think you are such a great example of being able to stay active in the community that you just love and grew up with and want to be a part of, but you didn't have to go the horse trainer route. You found something that worked for you and your skill sets. And, you know, I'm kind of with you. I graduated a little bit after the economy crashed in 2008, and I got into helping friends run horse shows because I couldn't find a quote unquote real adult job because, you know, that was just what you said. Like you have to know somebody to be able to get a job and or have experience. And yeah, it is so tough. I don't think people like realize how tough it is to put on a horse show and do it well. And just even an announcer, you're doing so much that people don't realize. You're not just announcing. I mean, you're keeping track of scores. You're keeping track of like all like, you know, the whatever. So anyway, it's nuts, but it's really cool to see somebody like kind of out there on social media, letting people know like, hey, you can do this.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it is, as an announcer, there are a million things that we're doing. It almost feels like announcing is the smallest thing that we are doing. And it is a very cool way. I mean, I don't imagine myself this way from like an ownership perspective, but it very much feels like I'm a co-producer of the show. You know, like it's my responsibility to figure out how that production is, you know, put out and perceived by all of those that are in the arena, exhibitors and spectators alike. And it has been a really cool way to literally have two careers. I've been very blessed in that I haven't had to choose, you know, pick one or the other. I've been able to truly make both kind of full-time careers and be in industries that I love and around animals that I love without the grind. I was talking to Steve Ross the other day, who said horse training is a hard way to make an easy living. And it was very well said. And I have so much respect for trainers and exhibitors and ranch owners and what it takes to do that. And I love to be able to contribute to that from a show production standpoint, you know, in the way that I do.
So you said that, you know, you didn't really ever plan on being an announcer. It kind of just fell into your lap. And by the second day you were hooked. So what was it that really like pulled you in and made you realize like that you love it so much?
There's a few things. I loved the ability to realize that what I did brought an energy, right? Laid a foundation for that event. And I think honestly, because I came up through the industry, both from the like exhibitor, you know, riding a horse side, but specifically coming up through scribing and through judging, I had such a respect for the sport with a level of integrity, right? Like understanding the scoring system, understanding how there are winners and losers by a high level of integrity in the sport. As an announcer, when I got the opportunity to realize that the way I call someone in the ring, the music that I played for them, the pauses that I took between each horse or between announcing the score, all of that created an environment that would allow the exhibitor to show their animal and their partner in the best way possible and create an attractive environment for new people to come in and watch and participate. That was what hooked me. I truly believe, I attribute a lot of this to my father because he was a very much a visionary in his, it still is, in thinking about horse sports as an opportunity for everyone in the world to experience horses. Some people will just never be able to buy or own one, right, or to show, but by watching it, coming to a show, seeing it on TV, they can have an experience with an animal. He's instilled that in me when I was young, I think just because that's what he believes and exudes as a person. And so I've always thought that way. I thought that way as a scribe, you know, and as a teenager, like I want everybody to have access to horses, right? I always did. Realizing that as an announcer, simple, small things that I could do would create the environment for that. That was what absolutely hooked me.
That like literally gave me chills. Like I'm wearing a sweatshirt so you can't see, but because like it like immediately when you said like you draw that, you know, that emotion and that just like energy, and it's so true, and it like literally just brought me flashbacks to like just, you know, being at the Quarter Horse Congress, like, you know, even though I won the Congress a very long time ago, we're reaching almost 20 years, but I that memory of the announcer announcing my name still sticks with me, and that, I mean, that says a lot for you're doing so much more than saying a person's name. Like you really are part of the reason there's so much energy, and like you do a lot of reining events, and I mean going to that fraternity and, you know, just like that pause when you know that there's a new high score, and that pause before they announce it. It's, I mean, it just grabs you.
It does. I remember thinking about that gives me chills. I remember at almost every event, I have a memory of, you know, a moment, an emotional moment, an energetic moment when it's, when there's that kind of feeling or emotion that happens. Sometimes it's not even like the Derby. There is a very vivid memory of recognizing that the score is coming in for Trevor Dare. We're heading for him to be the winner. So I very much remember Trevor's ride and that moment, that experience, what I was going to say, all those things. There are many things that I remember from other shows that are like those kind of emotional moments, like that, the victory kind of feelings that aren't even necessarily about the winner of the class. It's that, you know, or I know as an announcer, or I recognize as an announcer, that what I just said was a winning moment for that rider, right? Maybe that was a personal best for them. Maybe that was the first time with their horse. Maybe that was the last time with their horse. Many times I don't even know why it is. But those, that's what I live for. I mean, that's why I literally, you know, shift my schedule and go from horse show to horse show and don't sleep but 3 hours a night, because those kind of moments and those kind of experiences that I get to see with those exhibitors and being like a tiny part of that, I love it. I love it.
I think that's something that often gets overlooked, is just how much the announcer has to do with the horse show. And so is there anything that you do like to prep before a show, you know? I'm sure there's a lot, but can you tell us some of the things that are involved with that?
Absolutely. There is a physical preparation. There's a mental preparation. There's a show preparation. Physically, as cheesy as this sounds, rest is imperative. And I, through my 20s, didn't give that credit at all. I was like, I'm fine. I don't need to sleep. Sleep's for when you're dead. I'm learning that your body needs rest, and to sound good and to, you know, be able to project and do all of those things, you need rest, which comes in more ways than just sleep, right? But sometimes that's resting my voice. You know, there are sometimes I have to like not take phone calls late the night before a horse show or during a horse show, because I just have to rest my voice. So there's some things like that. There's definitely some like drinking tips. You know, I don't drink hot and cold beverages. I drink a lot of coffee, but I wait for it to cool down. I don't drink ice cold stuff when I'm announcing, because it'll actually constrict your vocal cords. So there's some, you know, little nuanced things like that. There's some breathing exercises that I do sometimes just as I'm going that'll force my body to get used to speaking from my diaphragm rather than my chest or my throat. There's a mental preparation for sure that also comes from it. Every show is a little bit different, depends on what show it is and my familiarity with that show. I'll study the schedule, I'll study the classes, I'll look on social media and sometimes see who's gonna be at that show to get familiar with names. I look at draw sheets to study the names and get familiar with the names or find the names that I don't know and figure out who I need to go find or Facebook message. If it's a new show, I just recently announced a few cow shows for the first time. And so there were a lot of new names there for me, as well as like I studied their rule book a little bit just to get familiar with some of those things that I needed to, you know, study up on. So there's some mental preparation that goes into that too. And then physically, I actually go to the showgrounds for almost every show I do the day before, do sound checks, do mic tests. I talk to the show producers always and find out, you know, for your show, what kind of energy do you want to portray? What kind of emotion do you want people to feel? How do you want them when they leave this event? You know, what do they want? What do you want them to think about this event? Because to me, it's then my job to now go produce that, go create that for them, which is much more than the words that you say, right? That's all the other stuff. So those are probably the three big categories.
So this, correct me if I'm wrong, but this year is the first year that you did the Derby. Yeah.
First year I did the main arena at the Derby.
The main arena at the Derby. You're also the first female to announce that?
Yep, the main arena. So, yes, they've had some females. I've announced the Attaquan Arena at the Derby and the Futurity for quite a few years, and they've had other females in the past in the Attaquan Arena. But, yes, I was the first, which was somewhat new news to me. I had to learn of that. You know, people had to tell me that because there are not very many, but there are some other great female announcers in the industry. And I didn't realize it, but yeah, I was the first one in the main Coliseum.
How was that as a feeling? And I mean, like you said, yes, there are other women that are doing this and, you know, I love promoting women and supporting women and, but you are in a very male dominant field. And so that it is such a huge accomplishment. How, I mean, like what was your brain thinking when you found this out? I mean, those videos of winners, like you see those all year, your voice is part of that. Your voice is part of Trevor Dare's win. It's huge.
Yeah. I've listened to it twice. And every time I'm like, oh God, it did not sound like that in real life. It was so different in real life. The experience was amazing. I've been announcing for over 12 years now. And so it was a diametric opposition because on one hand, maybe this is my own survival mechanism. It was another horse show, right? Like there's names on the draw list. There's riders, there's owners, there's, you know, sires and dams, and you announce it. On the other hand, it's the NRHA Derby and it's awesome. Right. And, particularly the finals, the non-pro finals and the open finals, the level of just emotion and energy was electric. It was awesome personally and, you know, in the arena. So that was very cool. It also was the way the calendar fell. It fell, the show started, or the main arena rather, started on Father's Day. And so it was really cool for me to go in or I think I actually was there setting up on Father's Day. And I think the show started the next Monday because I remember looking over, Kaiser Drags were in there doing all of their like arena maintenance and groundwork and adding dirt. And there was, you know, no one in the Coliseum other than me doing sound tests. And I remember being a young teenager when my father was doing NRHA work and feeling that Coliseum was huge and, you know, just all those things. It's almost, it's almost sanctuary feeling. And so standing on that stage, that booth where we announce from, is such a cool vantage point in that arena. And I remember like, how cool is this that I'm here on Father's Day, you know, setting up and preparing to show up in the morning and announce. So it was very cool. It was a huge honor. I didn't think much about the female part of it. I mean, I had known about it. They told me about it around that time. Like I didn't know much leading into the show. So once I learned about that, it was even more of an honor. I didn't think much about the, maybe I just didn't let that like make me nervous, right? Like, oh, other women haven't, right? Like I didn't think about that part at all. It was just like, okay, Chelsea, show up and how do you prepare to do your best, right? And how do you prepare to create an environment for these exhibitors that gives them the best opportunity to show their horses? And that did come with a level of nervousness because that's the part where it's not just another horse show, because it's not just another horse show for those exhibitors, right? Like it's the NRHA Derby for those exhibitors and for those owners. And sometimes for the people in the stands, you know, there are people there for the first time, right? Or youth kids, they're seeing it for the first time. So wanting to create, you know, the best environment for that was very cool. And if I'm being completely honest, the run, Trevor Dare's run, you know, leading up to his iconic score at the end, I had planned for weeks on how to announce the highest score and, you know, how long I paused and the way I said things. It didn't go anything like I planned. Nothing. It went nothing like I planned, which was fine. And, you know, it was great. It was still great. If you were there in the, it was a standing ovation. And, you know, watching it afterwards, you know, watching it on a video, you don't get any of that kind of stuff because the cameras, of course, zoomed in on him and you see his anticipation and he knows he did well, but how well? And we had just had a high score a few scores before, I think it was Casey Deary's. It was just such a cool, iconic moment, not only for me as an announcer to announce such a high score, but also for it being Trevor's first major, for it being, you know, that horse's sire's first major. Like there was a lot of, I knew all of that going into those moments of, you know, the score is. So yeah, iconic, electric. It was amazing. There's also another element too that, you know, I've questioned this. I question this all the time because as an announcer, you're always trying to get better. As a female, we have a different level of tools to work with because we just don't have the depth of tone that male announcers do. And so, you know, in comparison to other amazing announcers that have come before me, but particularly Keith Bradley had the iconic "the score," right? And he led into a high score with this very deep, dramatic, drawn out "the score." I physically don't have the capability to hit those tones. And so it's like you can't, unless you can do it that well or better, you just can't do that, right? And so I want to pay tribute to that. So I've consistently been thinking for years about how I create my own, not for the sake of me, but for the sake of still creating a really dramatic, exciting moment for that exhibitor and for the crowd. And I have my own unique ways to do it. That was kind of what I meant about, like, I had planned for weeks on the way to execute it for Trevor's, and I did, but that was still one of those things where it was, that creates that level of nervousness because it absolutely was, even though I've been doing that every time I announce, when you're in the main arena at the NRHA Derby, it's bigger, it's brighter, it's better, it's more electric. So it's great. It's great.
Well, and just like your marketing side of thing, being an announcer at that level, you are your own brand and you have that way of announcing. And like you said, there's other announcers that have these just like iconic, you know, words and just vocal tones and how they pronounce things and enunciate, and you have to find your own. I would imagine though that it would be very hard to announce Trevor's win when you're watching Hercules because he is one of the coolest horses I've ever seen in person. So I would get so caught up in watching that I would be like, oh wait, I have to work too. Because like what people don't see in that video is, I mean, when that horse stops, he's like thunder. I mean, you can hear, I mean, he's just so powerful, but anyway, what a cool moment. I love Trevor and Laura there. And, so yeah, it was super cool to see that. And how cool to have your first big announcing, you know, in the main arena and somebody like Trevor winning his first time. It's just cool.
It was very cool. And for all of that stuff is true, right? Like as I'm watching that run, I mean, I'm an avid lover of reigning first before anything. And so absolutely participating in the experience of that run is real. Additional to that, you know, I'm managing the music. And so thinking about like the length of the song and do I need to mix in, you know, like I kind of like remix the songs to make them longer, right? During the run. So you're like doing that, you're paying attention to the run, and at those events, I can see the scores coming in on the per maneuver level. So not only do I feel that run is about to be the high score, I actually know that it is. And you don't know it is until the very last stop, right? Because you could back up too many steps, or I don't quite remember pattern, but you know, there was a backup in the pattern, but you know, you could overturn and zero, right? So you never for sure know until the very last maneuver score is in. But I knew by the time we get to the last three maneuvers, if he can, you know, keep it together, then he's taking it home. That level, like I kept telling myself, Chelsea, think about your intonation, think about how you're going to execute this. And I was so excited about what was happening that it just came. Like it just, I mean, I'm glad I prepared because it's great, but.
So when you're, you know, making your playlist, I guess, and kind of figuring out what songs you're going to play, do you take into account each horse's like rhythm when you're picking a song? I know that's something that in dressage that the announcers, like they know each horse's kind of cadence and things like that. So they'll pick songs that go along with that. I didn't know if maybe that was something that you did as well.
Yeah, that's a great question. Yes, in general, not specifically. Maybe it's because I see so many horses, or I honestly have a terrible memory. So sometimes I can't say that I remember a specific horse and I'm thinking about that specific horse's cadence. On the flips, I mean, iconic ones that I see over a season. Yes. I'm more thinking about, like, I do pick songs very intentionally based on beats per minute, based on the typical cadence of a large, fast circle. Right. So I'm thinking about the cadence that a typical reining horse is running in a large, fast circle for the particular class. Right. So if I'm doing green classes and rookie classes and that kind of stuff for a day, I am picking a much more subdued set of songs, which is half the horse cadence and half because I know that I need to play something that's going to calm down those exhibitors and help the nerves rather than amplify them. Right. And create music to, you know, drive that energy. And on the flip side, yeah, if it's for an open class, or something big like an aged event, then I'm absolutely picking a higher beats per minute kind of song that absolutely fits with that cadence. I do pay attention to the horses' names sometimes, or their barn names if I know them. And I would say probably 30 or 40% of the music that I play, at least in the reining world, is by request or has been by request in some way. So over the years, people know that they can request music from me. And many times, especially if they see me at a lot of shows, they won't request songs anymore. They'll just request genres, right? Or they might request a song and then the next show, something like that, right? And so I'll find something based on cadence first, and then I'll use those kind of criteria to help, you know, trickle down what I'm playing.
So you recently kind of started doing some more of the cow horse stuff. Is there much of a difference between how you prepare or how you even work those shows that kind of differs from the reining?
Not other than more studying, because I've grown up and known reining so well and I have contacts. I mean, when certain rules change in reining, if I know the rule has changed, but I don't, you know, it's not published yet in the rule book and those kind of things, I know exactly who to call to find that information so that I can make sure that I'm up to speed for production purposes. I have to do more preparation and homework going into the cow horse shows just because I'm newer to that world. The rest of the preparation is relatively similar, and there is some differences. The playlists that I'll prepare for the down the fence stuff versus, you know, the dry work and rain work, that kind of stuff. There's some nuanced differences there, you know, learning how to naturally mix the music in a way that feels natural for that is slightly different in cow work than it is reining. So very small, but most of it is quite similar, which has made it really fun for me to go in. I mean, first of all, cow horse stuff is so much fun, like a freaking blast. So that's fun in and of itself. But the fact that it is very similar from an announcer's perspective, the worst thing going into an event is to not be comfortable or confident as an announcer in an event, because that lack of confidence will come through the microphone, it will come through your tone, people will just feel it. So I've turned down shows before because it's like I just don't know that discipline enough yet to feel comfortable on the microphone and keep the flow of the event going. So, you know, give me a year, let me do some homework, you know, come study your event and then I'll come. There is enough similarity that, you know, it's very similar.
So are you thinking about expanding to other disciplines, or, you know, do you think you kind of found your niche, or What all are you going to do?
That's a great question. That might change if you ask me this a year from now. I love reining. It is totally my first love. I think that it, for many reasons, is one of the greatest sports that has the opportunity to be a spectator-driven sport. In learning more about the cow horse stuff, I would say it is a near or close second, maybe an equal second in that. And so I am happily stepping into that realm. And for all the other reasons I mentioned, I do a handful of, so I, in a week and a half, will fly to the AQHA World Show and we'll be announcing the World Show. I did the Youth World Show this year. And that was an interesting experience for all intents and purposes, as well as, you know, I was very honest about, you know, my working Western is my knowledge. It's where my experience is. I have announced some small AQHA shows or, you know, just near around places that I am, or if somebody needs me to fill in. But you guys are calling me for the World Show and the Youth World Show. If you're going to need me to do those disciplines, understand that's not my like expertise and forte, and you might, you know, want to use me here and not there. And when I got there, they were like, no, you can do it all. And so, I mean, I did barrels. I, you know, all the speed events. I did all the speed events. I did some pleasure, like the pleasure finals. And I can't say that I would necessarily go intentionally seek out some of those other, like the all around stuff. They were awesome though. Like, I mean, I think when you can appreciate horses and when you can appreciate horsemanship and when you can, I love sports. I love victory. I love competition. So whatever the sport is happening in there, I can appreciate that partnership that's going on and, you know, the sport of things, the competition of things in such a way that, yeah, I'm super excited about World Show. Especially now having Youth World under my belt. It's like, okay, I can do enough studying. I can get myself up to speed. You know, I got this. But the working Western stuff, I would say, is where I am most confident. And I would love the opportunity to do some more in that space.
Well, and I guess I've never really thought about it from an announcer standpoint. But, you know, the working Western is so much different from, like, the all-around or the pleasure stuff. And I showed all-around and pleasure for about 15 years and then went to the cow horse. And now I have a reining yearling. So I'm just kind of bouncing all around. Whereas at the Snapple Bit Fraternity or the NRHA Derby Year Fraternity, you know, you want these like amped up music, AC/DC, something fast, something exciting. Whereas in the Western pleasure and in the all around, yeah, I mean, yeah, you might have some fun music, but it's much softer, it's much more like slower, you know, especially in the pleasure. You don't want any kind of like, you know, like adrenaline, like, you know, so it's just so different.
And there's also, I don't know how to label this. Like every time I talk about it, I'm like, it's hard to talk about because there's not like an easy label to put on this, but the amount of things that an announcer controls or oversees that play into production when the microphone is off is imperative to the run of the class. And those all around classes particularly have so many nuanced rules around them that the announcer is kind of overseeing the production of that. If I don't know to look for, it's getting missed, right? You know, that could be something as simple as in the trail class, the music literally has to be so quiet that they can hear the ticks, right, of the hoof on the pole. And I was just thinking about music from a perspective of, you know, you don't want it to be too loud. You do want it to have upbeatness, blah, blah, blah. Okay. But I would get calls from the judges. Like, we can't hear the ticks. And I'm like, hear what ticks? You know what I mean? Like, and then okay. You know, or something like in a rail class, having the person at the back gate calling numbers to me at the announcer stand to make sure that every single number entering the ring is entered in our system. I'm a reigning announcer. We have one at a time. Like I know that number is in my, you know what I mean? So those kind of things, like all that stuff happens. And those are very simple examples. It obviously gets much more complex, but those are kind of things where like if you're not an experienced announcer in that production of that class, it can just throw off, you know, you lose 5 minutes per class per year, an hour and a half longer than you needed to be, and your judges didn't get dinner and, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's real. It's fun. It's real.
That's something that I would never have even thought about with music in trail and things like that, of not being able to hear the ticks. That's so interesting. I'm just like fascinated by all of this. I think it's just so cool that, you know, with the music and everything for each discipline, how you really have to pay attention to that. I never, ever would have thought about that. Are there any like specific songs that you would say are your go-tos or your favorites or...
Yes. While I pull them up for you, because I'll list two or three that are some of my faves, I'll mention another one that's a really good example of an announcer production thing, you know, when the mic is off. In raining, if somebody wears the wrong number in the ring, we make a note on the draw sheet that we turn back into the office. It's a $25 fine. In an AQHA class, if they wear the wrong number, it's a DQ. And so... if I don't know that, the reason I can tell this story is because this has happened. I was announcing an AQHA reigning once. I remember the exhibitor. This is how like jarring those kind of experiences are, because it was a crazy, like it was one of those shows where just a million people enter, you know, post-enter, your days are 10x the size that they expect it to be. Everybody's doing a million jobs because you're just wanting to get everybody shown. And so they literally gave me a wireless mic, and I was both helping the back gate and the announcer, right? Like I had, you know, a clipboard of the draw numbers, and then I was standing at the back gate and like helping the back. It was wild. It was awesome. But I'm not thinking about the importance of checking the number. I'm thinking like next horse needs to be ready while the last horse is on their stop, because we have 170 goes to make sure we get into this arena today, and we have to do this again for the next 10 days, you know, that's kind of stuff. I put a horse, it's an open rider. The winning score, phenomenal run, beautiful Palomino. I'll never forget it. I remember what the guy was wearing. And one of the scribes calls into me literally as they're walking out of the ring, and I'm announcing the score. And then they're calling into me the score, right, so that I can get the score in. And I get a score. It was three judges. I get a score, and a zero. And again, raining. We would just hold that. So that was a whole thing. And I was like, wait, do you guys want me to hold? Right. And they were like, no, they're wearing the wrong number. And I was like, that's a $25 fine. Okay, no. And they were like, no, wearing the wrong number. You know, and so it took me a quick second to figure it out and to think about it. Okay, oh my God. Then I have to turn around and tell the exhibitor. And, you know, of course, then they're like, well, shoot, weren't you checking numbers when I walked in? Well, it's fudge. No, I wasn't. Like, ooh. Yeah, so that's real. Okay, back to awesome songs. So, I have a playlist of probably 50 that are like my go-to finals songs. I have a finals playlist of about a 250 playlist that, depending on who it is, you know, I can pull from, but I've got like a favorites at the top. I will not give you guys all 50, although it is available on Spotify if anybody wants to go get it, because I've had people start to ask about that. And so I put that on Spotify. So you guys are happy to, it's just under Chelsea Sutton Horse Show Finals playlist if you want to go find that. But, you know, personally, some of my favorite songs, ironically enough, I haven't told Trevor this. I haven't really had a conversation with Trevor since his run. Like we're not, you know, we don't know each other that well personally. We've just seen each other around shows. But one of literally probably in my top three is the song that I played for Trevor at the Derby. And so, you know, of course he won, right? I played my favorite song, of course. but that one is kind of like a lesser known song. It's called I Like to Win. And it is such a like champion, you know, victory song by Sean Locke. So that's what I played for Trevor's ride. That's definitely on the top of my list. There's a few from Black Eyed Peas that are just great, like good final songs. Boom Boom Pow, some of those. This is much more on the rock side of it, but I really like Black Betty as a finals song. There's a few different variations of it. Macklemore, Can't Hold Me, another good, kind of different, but like good amp song. You know, if you ask me that every quarter, my top three are going to shift a little bit, but those are some of the ones that I'm feeling right now.
We'll have to drop your Spotify information in our show notes so people can check it out, because I know I am going to be looking for it because I need good workout music and just good hype music. And, you know, you can never go wrong with that.
Totally. Here's a like secret insider fact. I list about half of, you know, if I'm at a 10-day horse show, I would say 5 of the 10 days, I listen to a finals playlist as I get ready in the morning, because it like turns on my energy. I mean, you're getting ready at 5 in the morning, right? Trying to put your mascara on with your eyes half closed. And I have to start that first horse sounding like I'm going to sound if they're the winner. So a lot of times I'll listen to my finals playlist to like amp it up.
It amps everybody up. Outside of your, I mean, very, very busy announcing schedule, you do all that branding. You run a digital platform called Rainer's Thought, but you also just came out with a book, and you just talked to us about it right before we started recording. So you said it's about raining. Do tell all the details on where people can find it, what it's about, and, you know, how people can buy it.
I appreciate that. I have been having a blast with Rainer's Thought and the collaboration with announcing Rainer's Thought, and our marketing agency is so fun, because Rainer's Thought is a digital platform. And so, you know, the digital marketing expertise plus the horse stuff has been a blast. And as a, you know, fourth arm to the things, yeah, I wrote a book this year. What? I co-wrote a book. I'm a co-author. So there are multiple authors in this book. It is called Wisdom of the Silver Sisters, Guiding Grace. And the idea of the book is a collaboration of literal silver sisters, women mostly over the age of 50. And when they called me to potentially co-author, I was like, my hair is chemically, at the time, it was chemically silver. Like it was bleached, you know, it was bleached and silver. And I was like, this is a joke, right? And they were like, no, like we want you to co-author it. And I was like, I'm not skilled enough. Like, I don't have enough wisdom to write in a book called Wisdom of the Silver Sisters. And so I literally said no. And they called me back and they were like, seriously, like you are, you just don't think about it that way. So please consider it. It was such an awesome experience, because many of the people that contributed to the book, the compilers of the book, are multi-published authors and multi-published bestsellers. And so for me, it was a really cool opportunity to learn from people who had been down that road before and experienced that before. And I never thought about writing a book before. And so that's why when they asked me, I was like, I don't have that skill set yet. I've never thought about that. But as I explored the idea, it was like, well, I would love to learn from someone else on not only the writing process, because that's a skill set in and of itself, but the publishing process is that's a whole nother thing. That's a whole nother business model. So it was a really cool experience. My section of the book is called The Wrong Questions. And I wrote it, actually, I finished writing it right after the NRHA Derby. And it is my approach to writing my section was about, I really had to question, what wisdom have I gained, right? And how did I go gain that? And in asking myself that question, I realized that as a marketing consultant and as a business consultant in the marketing work that we do, I mean, you guys heard the story. I started right out of college, and you know nothing coming right out of college. Like, I was so bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and excited for the world. But when it comes to experience, like business experience, even though I've been working since I was 16, that's, you know, that's minuscule in comparison to so much else. So coming into a business and operating as a marketing consultant, I realized that my best way to guide them was to ask questions. And so I approached my chapter in talking about how I've gained wisdom, and it has been in asking questions. in writing, you know, the writing process was kind of done all spring. And at the NRHA Derby, I'm kind of giving you inside secrets to the book, but at the NRHA Derby, I caught myself asking the same, doing the same things, right? I would ask questions to the show producers about what kind of quality production they wanted. And I would ask questions to, you know, the audio engineers about the sound quality and how I make sure that my voice translates, you know, all those things. You gain wisdom by asking questions. And then I asked myself, how in the world did I end up at the top of the arena at the NRHA Derby? And so I ended up writing the chapter around not that question. It was actually about how asking the wrong questions has led me to the right answers and gaining some of the wisdom that I've gained. And I share some kind of inside secrets on some judging stuff in the horse world and some, you know, ways to navigate business of the business of the horse world, business in general through that. And so it was a really cool experience. We just hit Amazon's bestseller list in like 7 categories last week. We hit it in the Kindle sales and then the soft cover sales, which I'm blown away at. I'm doing a book signing next weekend, you guys. I'm literally like, what? Like, I go to book signings. I one time went to a book signing, you know, like is this real? Like, is this a real thing? So I am such an honor, especially after the year and experiences that I've had to not only be able to write about that, but then to have the book do so well and be amongst so many amazing authors who have many of them written many books. And so you guys are kind of the first ones I'm publicly telling about this, especially in the horse world. So I'm really excited, very excited. You can find it on Amazon if you want to get it.
That is so cool. Now, the other women who wrote in this book, is it just people from all aspects of life? It's not a horse-specific book, just your section is.
Yep, that's right. It's all aspects of life, everything from there are attorneys, there are writers, there are a lot of business entrepreneur women, a few, you know, stay-at-home mom, raise the family kind of gals. And all of us had a very different approach to what we wrote about, but all the theme, if you will, is the wisdom that we've gained in our life and how did we go about doing that? How did that come to us? So my section is, yeah, about the horse world.
How did they find you? I mean, it had to have been more than your chemically altered silver hair that got their attention and everything.
Yes, you're right. It was. actually, the compiler of the book, who was one of the main authors, has worked for me in my marketing agency. And she is a whole nother like cool story. I won't tell you the whole thing. I'll tell you like 2 sentences of it. So this woman, and I know she'd be fine with me saying this, her name is Sharon Jordan, multi-published author. She came to me back when I was really expanding back in 2017. And I had multiple positions open. I was taking interviews. I had 163 applicants for 2 positions in 3 days. It was insane. And of course, on an application, you don't know anybody's age. You don't know any of that stuff. And so it is for a social media. The title of the position was Social Media Ninja. And it was literally a social media coordinator. It was working under a social media strategist, you know, just the boots on the ground social media activity. And this woman, this silver haired, she was turning 70 at the time. This was 5 years ago. And she was turning 70 at the time. And she walks in bright-eyed and she just exudes joy. I love her so much. And she walks in and I'm talking about brought her A game. I mean, of course, she's 70. Like she slayed that interview. Like slayed it. She basically interviewed me. It was amazing. And I was like, you're answering these questions great. And a lot of our interview questions are about, you know, the philosophical, right? They're not like, do you know how to make a tweet? Right. And so she's answering these questions really well. And I finally had to say, like, do you know that you're interviewing to post content on social media? And she was like, yes, I do. And I just got an Instagram account last week. And I have dedicated my 70s to, I don't remember her exact quote, but like, I've dedicated my 70s to, you know, learning technology to the best way that every silver-haired something-something should do. And I believe that me serving your company while I also learn these things is the best way for me to blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you're hired. Okay, fine, you're hired. And so she worked for me for years part-time because she had other things that she was doing, like publishing her fourth book and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And just an unbelievable contribution to our team. I always called her like grandma, you know, like Grandma Sharon, because she had the wisdom, you know, she would challenge us to think about things in ways that none of us were thinking about, not technologically, but philosophically, right? And so she worked for us for multiple years, and she is the compiler of the book. And so she called me and was like, which you can't argue with her because she knows you, right? Like, she worked for me for years. And so I'm like, okay, I'm honored. Yes, let's do it.
That's such a funny story. And I mean, you can't say no when you had silver hair. Like, that's, you know, how can you deny that?
You're not wrong.
It's actually funny. Last night I was going through Amazon looking for new books to order, and I saw your book, and I was like, oh, that looks kind of interesting. Maybe I'll go back to that one. So now I'm definitely going to buy it. So now I'm going to have your book and your Spotify playlist. So thank you so much for all of these new.
You're so welcome.
So much more entertainment. But yeah, I mean, thank you so much for being on here with us today. I learned so much about just the production side of the horse industry and announcing. Honestly, those I really am like fascinated by. I never would have thought about any of those little things. And I think it's incredible the work that you do, and that you do it so seamlessly, like without anyone knowing that all of that preparation and work and everything goes into it. So, but before you wrap up, is there, where can our listeners find you on social media or anything like that?
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys having me. Thank you. I could literally talk about my work and my announcing all day, every day. I am a recovering workaholic. I literally love it. I live for it. And the fact that, I mean, I've heard you guys talk about this on other podcasts, the fact that we get to make our jobs in a world that we enjoy is such a blessing. Even when it's hard and it's long hours and it's frustrating, it is still a blessing. So I appreciate you guys having me on and giving me an opportunity to talk about it for a little while. You can find me online. The easiest places are Instagram and Facebook. You can find me under my personal name, Chelsea Sutton, of course, on Facebook. Instagram is C-I-M Forgiven, C as in Chelsea, I-M Forgiven. And then it is also me that you're talking to, me and my partner, Shelly, on Rainer Stop. So that's an easy way to find us, too, both on Facebook and Instagram. We respond to every single message that comes in. So that's an easy one to look up, just Rainer Stop, all one word, on Facebook and Instagram. You guys can reach out to me via email as well, chelsea@consultment.agency. So that's the combination of words consulting and management, consultment.agency. I would love to hear from the listeners. And there's so many people I know that I often cross at horse shows, and I might see a face that I recognize but haven't digitally connected or physically connected. So if your audience is listening, I would love to say hi.
Yeah, and if you're at a reining or maybe a cow horse show or the world show, just look for the brightly colored hair girl sitting in the announcer stand and you'll be able to find her.
Indeed you will. And please do come and say hi, because for me too, this is, I know this sounds so goofy, but when we're sitting in an announcer's booth looking into the arena, when you're all in your getup and you have your hat on, it's really hard for me sometimes to connect the name that I'm saying on the paper with the face. And I'm also googling and gagaing over your amazing horse. So if you see me, you know, out on the go, please do like, oh, hey, I'm so-and-so, you know, we were at this show, because it's so good for me to put that connection together. And it's often not that I, you know, sometimes I think I seem like maybe cold just because I don't recognize the face from the arena. But I'll remember the name. Like, if you tell me your name and I have announced it, I'll be like, girl, I know you. Yes, come here. Give me a hug. So yeah, definitely say hi.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on here and talking with us.
Thanks again to Weaver for sponsoring this episode of The Ride.
Tuning into The Ride podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and please be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow Horse and Rider Magazine on social media and find us at horseandrider.com.
If you guys have any questions or comments, please be sure to hit us up at horseandrider@equinenetwork.com. We want to hear from you guys.
And if you like what you're listening to, be sure to leave us a review on iTunes.